I want to share some thoughts with you this morning that were not originally what I had planned to talk on this morning, but I've always felt like that somebody that claims to feel a burden to preach should always follow the impressions of the Spirit rather than maybe what they've been studying on recently. And some of the things that I've been studying, even as of yesterday, and had planned out in my mind, just last night as I thought more about it and prayed more about it, I just felt like the Lord was leading me to go in a different direction. So I'm going to preach to you on some things this morning that they're not new to me as a concept, but just new as in the fact that I wasn't planning on preaching on this. So pray for me this morning. Have you ever seen one of those deals where maybe a psychiatrist will have a piece of paper and it's got a funny looking ink blot on it, and he'll have somebody sitting out in front of him and he'll flash that ink blot up, and what he's going to ask him is, tell me the first thing you think about when you see this ink blot. And they'll flash one up and it'll be a funny looking shape or something, and somebody may say, well, I think I see a butterfly. Some people may say, I see a snail, or I see a rainbow, or whatever object those people may see. And that psychiatrist will say, well, based on the answers that you've given me, here's your problem. Okay, I don't know how they do that, but I guess they understand something I don't understand. But they say, well, you saw a butterfly, you must really like the outdoors, or you saw a bat, you must be kind of dark and evil or whatever. But anyway, so these people hold up these images, and they're wanting you to say what's the very first thing that comes to your mind. Now, what I have found in my time with the Primitive Baptist, which I know most of all of you know, has not been too terribly long. I've been with them about 5 years. Maybe 6 years, it's been somewhere in there. So the vast majority of my church life has not been in the Primitive Baptist Church. And so I know this truth very well, that if you were to hold up a sign that said Primitive Baptist on it, I can tell you what most people are going to think right off the bat. They're going to think predestination. And they're going to put up a block wall. If you were to say, well, I'm just because I'm familiar with the Southern Baptist, because that's what I know the best. If you were to hold up a sign that said Southern Baptist, then you're going to think free will, just like that. That's the first thing you're going to think about. Now, in my time in the Primitive Baptist Church, I have found that what people outside of the Primitive Baptist Church think about the beliefs of the actual Primitive Baptist Church are not accurate. And I don't mean that negative. I'm just saying, most of the time, if you took somebody off the street that did not attend the Primitive Baptist Church and you said, tell me what you know about the Primitive Baptist beliefs, and they were to spell it out for you, and you were to line those up with what is actually taught in the Primitive Baptist Church, you would find that they're not the same. They're not accurate. And so there's a great misunderstanding out in the world outside of the Primitive Baptist Church of what the Primitive Baptist actually believe. So what I'd like to try to address this morning is two of the terms that we've already discussed a little bit this morning, and how do they apply to what the Primitive Baptists teach. And one of those things is free will. The other thing that I want to address is the word predestination. Free will and predestination. Now, if somebody were to come up to me and say, okay, you're a Primitive Baptist, do you believe in free will? Well, I really can't answer that question. Because you could come up to me and say, what is your favorite color? And I'm going to tell you my favorite color is green. But I'm very thankful that when my beautiful wife smiles at me, that her teeth are not green. Okay? You see where I'm getting at? Green is my favorite color. But if I say green's my favorite color and you apply the absolute across the board, then you think, well, he must want his wife's teeth to be green. Well, I don't. I'm glad that they're pearly white. Okay? So, you say, do Primitive Baptists believe in free will? I need a little more information before I can answer that question. Now, if you would ask me, what is your favorite color on just a blank piece of paper, I'm going to say green. What's your favorite color of your wife's teeth? I'd like them to be pearly white. So I need a little more information before I can give you an absolute answer on what my favorite color is. And I need a little more information before I can say, do I believe in free will? But I will say this, do I believe in free will? That would be a resounding yes. I do believe in free will. Do you believe in predestination? That is a resounding yes, I do. Because the Bible teaches both of those things. So I want to look through the Bible here, and I want to try to give, maybe if you're new to the Primitive Baptist beliefs, this will give you a better understanding of what we actually believe about free will and what we believe about predestination. And if you're very rooted in these things, maybe this will stir your mind in a new and different way to help explain it maybe to people that that come asking you about that. So I want to look at a few things in the Bible here, and I want to start in Mark, the 5th chapter. Now the scene here is Jesus has been on a ship with his disciples. And I like what Brother Dolph Painter points out about this. There's a tempestuous sea, the storm is raging, the wind and the waves are crashing in on the boat, and you find Jesus asleep. And the disciples come to him and say, "Master, carest not thou not that we perish?" And he rises and says, "Peace, be still," and he calms the storm. All right, that's very interesting. And Dolph Painter points out, you need to always keep in mind when you read that account where Jesus was going and probably what was on his mind as he lay in that bed asleep. Jesus knows on the other side of this ocean, we're fixing to land on the bank, and we're going to be in the land of Gadara, and there's going to be a man in Gadara that's possessed with the devil. And if you read there on down, starting in the 5th chapter, it says they came over unto the other side of the sea into the country of the Gadarenes. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. This is a man that's possessed with a demon or a devil, who had his dwelling among the tombs. Now listen, my purpose here is not to paint the picture of this guy, but I hope you can visualize him in your mind. He had his dwelling among the tombs. He walks in the graveyards. And he says he had an unclean spirit. And no man could bind him, no, not with chains. Here's a man, because he is possessed with this devil, has a supernatural strength. There's not a soul in here, if I bound you with chains, could break out of. But this man is so overcome with this demon, this devil, that he's got these chains wrapped around him. Obviously, groups of men would go up there with their pitchforks and their torches, and they'd grab this man, throw him down, and do their best to tie him up with these chains. And just like old Samson was, he could just bust them off of him. No man could bind him. It says he had been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces. Neither could any man tame him. I'm sure somebody sat down with this old guy and tried to reason with him and tried to teach him and explain to him. Said, "Brother, you got to calm down. You're running around these tombs like a crazy man. You need to calm down and try to exercise some self-control." It says, "And always night and day he was in the mountains and the tombs crying and cutting himself with stones." You read another account of this over in Matthew and in Luke where this man ran around naked. Okay, here's a man running around naked, said he had long fingernails and probably long scraggly hair, and he had scars all over him, and he was probably actively bleeding because he continued to cut himself, and he runs in the tombs all night and all day. You try to wrestle with him, he beats you. You try to reason with him, and he it's like talking to an animal, and he's just, can you picture this guy? Just a scary, mean, wicked-looking man possessed with the devil. And Jesus steps out on that bank, okay? And it says, "And when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshipped him." Now, don't let that confuse you there. The word worship there means to crouch and to cower down, okay? Now, in submission. Now, there are times that we may crouch and cower down to somebody, and we have no recognition of them as being holy and godly or anything like that. You think about it, and this is an example I always use in this situation. You take some of these wrestling matches. You got two men that come out with one another, and they got muscles bulging out. Just unreal how muscular these guys are. And they're standing face to face, and they hate each other, and they want to beat each other in the ground. Well, they go at it for a little bit. The last thing those guys will ever want to do is to surrender to their opponent. Their testosterone is pumping. They do not want to submit to their opponent as being the greater. But after a while, one of them is going to get the other one in a particular move. It was always the figure four when I was growing up in wrestling. I don't know, maybe y'all know what that is, the figure four. And they get them in a certain position. They begin to exert pressure, maybe on their arm or their neck or their foot or their legs, to where they cannot break the hold. And here's their choice. I've either got to tap on this mat in acknowledgement that this man is greater than I am, or he is going to break my arm. Okay, that's how it works. It's called submission. So you have this guy, he's going to tap on the mat and say, "You are greater than I am." But the only reason he does that is because the man that has him in this bind is clearly got him in a position where he says, "I am more powerful than you. I am making you submit to me and in a sense bow down and worship me because I am the greater." Now here this man that is possessed with this devil comes up to Jesus and he knows, you'll see the devil talk in a minute, he knows that Jesus is the greater. He does not come to him and worship him saying, "Oh, I'm just a poor wretched demon, Lord, I wish you would just give me your spirit and save me." He's bowing down and crouching because he knows Jesus is greater than I am. He does it because he has to, because Jesus is that much greater. The devil cries with a loud voice and says, "What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? I adjure or I charge thee that thou torment me not." He doesn't sound like he's submitting to Jesus in the sense that, "Oh, Jesus, I love you, I want to worship you." He's submitting to him because, "I know that you've got the power to do to me whatever you want to do to me, so I'm just cowering down at your presence." He says, "Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit," and he asked him, "What is thy name?" And he said, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And you go on down and read there, there were about 2,000 swine. And when Jesus cast the unclean spirits out, they go into the swine, and the swine run down the hill and they're drowned. Now, what that tells me is this man was possessed not by one demon or devil, but by probably 2,000. Because he says, "My name is Legion, and we're many." Well, there's at least enough of them to go into 2,000 swine. So this man is severely possessed with the devil. Now, here's what I want you to take out of this. I don't know what this guy's name is. Let's just say his name was Jim. There was a time maybe Jim was just a regular old guy. He'd go to the market. He'd plant in his garden. He'd play with his family. He'd do all that kind of stuff, maybe. I'm speculating. But at some point, this man becomes possessed with 2,000 demons. And he is not the same person that he used to be. He's cutting himself. He runs around naked. He can't be bound with chains or fetters. He's just a wreck of a person. Now, somewhere, maybe deep down inside old Jim, do you not think there was a desire to break free from that? To go back to his normal life and say, "I just wish I could just spit all these demons out. I wish I could cast them out of myself and just go back to my normal life." Maybe deep, deep, deep down somewhere in the recesses of his brain, he thought, "I'm so tired of being controlled by these demons. I'm so tired of watching them overpower me and picking up that stone and cutting myself. I'm so tired of running around fighting these people. I don't want to be like this." But nonetheless, I am like this. Because the power that holds me in bondage is so much greater than what I am. Now, let me ask you this. Where did this man's free will fit into this scenario? Do you not think he wanted to break free and get out of this and return to his normal life? I think he probably did. But what's the problem? Is that he couldn't. It was beyond the limits of his desire and his free will to cast those demons out of him. What did it take? It took Jesus Christ coming along, and he didn't have to mix up a magic potion. He didn't have to do a great chanting exorcist type thing. He didn't have to throw holy water on him. He didn't have to do any of that kind of stuff. He just said, "Get out of there. Amen. Come out of here." And what did they do? They were subject to him, which they already knew that. That's why they cowered down when they got there.
Right.
Now, let's look over at Matthew the 15th chapter. I want you to keep these thoughts in the back of your mind. Matthew the 15th chapter. Let's see, let's go about the 21st verse. "Then Jesus went thence and departed in the coast of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan, a Gentile, came out of the same coast and cried unto him, saying, 'Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil.'" All right, obviously we see the common denominator here. Here we have a woman that comes to him and says, "My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil." Now it's very interesting to note there that word grievously, the Greek word there, The Greek word there means to be worthless or to be totally depraved. All right, don't miss that. And he answered her a word, and his disciples came and besought him, saying, "Send her away, for she crieth after us." Read on down there till you get about to verse 28. And it says, "Then Jesus answered and said unto her, O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was made whole from that very hour." Okay? Now that takes a little special meaning to me. It's one thing for me to be possessed by a devil and somewhere deep down wanting to break free. It's another thing if my daughter was possessed with a devil. Don't you know that that just tormented that poor woman? To see probably behavior real similar to what we refer to as the wild Gadarene, the guy that walked the tombs naked, cutting himself. Probably very similar. What if you saw that behavior in your child? And you saw her do things that you're just like, oh, that breaks my heart to see you do things. And she goes to Jesus and says, look, she is grievously vexed, Lord. She is so depraved, and she is such in deep bondage to the possession of this devil that she is worthless to us. All she is just a chaotic, wild person that just really needs to be put in a straitjacket and locked away in a padded room. It's that bad, Lord. I need you. Now, I bet this mama would have done whatever she could to have gotten rid of that devil. Don't you imagine? Would you not do that for your child? Whatever I need to do for this girl, I'm going to do it. Maybe this girl was 5, maybe she was 10 or 12, I don't know. But I bet somewhere deep down inside of that girl said, I wish I could just go running through the fields again. I wish I could go build sandcastles again. I wish I could play with my sisters and my brothers. I wish I could crawl up in my mama's lap and just cuddle and snug her and tell her I love her and just to feel the warmth of my mama's arms. I wish I could go fishing with my daddy. I wish I could do all those things again. But the problem is this. I am so in bondage to this devil that I am described as being just depraved and worthless. And I cannot break free from the bondage that this devil has put me in. But Jesus, just as a passing thought, says, you know what? She's healed. And just like that, that devil came out of her, and she was healed. Just like the wild Gadarene. Let's go to one more over here in Matthew, the 17th chapter. Matthew, the 17th chapter. Let's look over in the 14th verse. Notice again the common denominator here. Matthew 17, 14. And when they were come to the multitude, there came to him a certain man, kneeling down to him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is a lunatic and sore vexed, for oftentimes he falleth into the fire and oft into the water. And I brought him to thy disciples, and they could not cure him. Here's another dad bringing his child. That word lunatic there means to be possessed with the devil. And he comes to Jesus and says, listen, my child is sore vexed. Do you know what that term sore vexed means? It's the exact same word that the Syrophoenician woman used when she said she's grievously vexed. That word grievously and that word sore are the exact same Greek word. And both of them mean to be totally depraved and worthless. This man says, listen, Lord, my son, whom I love, who we shared so many good times together, and I loved him. I remember the day he was born, and I remember holding him in my arms. I remember the first time he crawled. I remember the first step he took. I remember the first time he said, Dada. And I remember his first haircut. I remember when he first got his teeth and he started eating real food. I remember all those times, Lord, but now he's possessed. And he'll just, Lord, we'll just be walking along and he's just got this look of just possession on him. And he'll see a fire and he'll run jump in it, Lord. And I've got, you see these burns on my arms, Lord? You know what those are from? From me going over there into that fire and dragging that same child who I held in my arms out. Lord, I've seen him go to the edge of a lake and just jump off a cliff and fall down in the water and just start sinking to the bottom. And Lord, I've jumped in there and I've got him so many times. And Lord, I am tired. And I'm heartbroken. And I miss my son. And I want him back. Do you not think that it was that father's desire or his will to break the bonds of that possession that was on his child? Absolutely. You better believe it was. Do you think somewhere deep down inside that child said, I want to be fishing with my daddy again. I want to be walking with my daddy again. I want to be doing those things. But what's the problem? They were in such bondage that nothing they could do could break free. It does not matter how bad their will and desire was to be free from those things. Their free will was totally ineffective against this type of bondage. That's what I want you to see here. If you read on down there, it says, let me see if I can find it here. Verse 18, it says, and Jesus rebuked the devil, and he departed out of him. And the child was cured from that very hour. Now, here's three examples. I'm going to give you one more. Here's three examples of a man, a grown man, possessed with devils. 2000. I've got a little girl here possessed with the devil. And I've got a little boy here possessed with the devil. The descriptions that were given of them were they were in such bondage that they were totally depraved and they were worthless. Now, my question is, what about their free will? What about their decision and their liberty to say, I don't want to be like this anymore. I want to be free from this, set free, and I want to return back to my normal life. What's the problem there? Is their free will is limited. Your free will can only go so far. That's what I want you to see. John, the 11th chapter, we know this story very well. In John, the 11th chapter, the ultimate picture of bondage. In John, the 11th chapter, you have a man named Lazarus. And I won't belabor the point here so I can get to the rest of it. You have a man named Lazarus of Bethany who has died. His sisters are weeping over him. They call for Jesus and Jesus delays. By the time Jesus gets there, Mary and Martha's brother Lazarus has died. Just think of all the memories they've had with Lazarus. All the good times they shared. It is clear that they loved their brother deeply. And they probably stood over that body like we have many, many times. And you see that dead, lifeless body that looks like they would just sit up and just start talking to you. But there's nothing there. The spirit is gone. And all they have is a shell of a body. And they're crying over it. They're weeping because they know the laughter that I used to hear from him. Just the tone and the way his voice sounded. And the color of his eyes. And the jokes that he would make. And just his personality will never experience that on this earth again. And they were crying about it. They were sad about it. They were upset about it. And you get over here to where they come to Jesus gets there. And Martha says to him in verse 24, let's go to 21. Martha said unto Jesus, Lord, if thou hast been here, my brother had not died. Praise God that geographic remoteness is not a limit to the Lord. If you had been here, Jesus, my brother had not have died. And then he goes on. Jesus teaches her some things there. And then he goes about verse 34 and he says, where have you laid him? Jesus goes to the tomb and he prays to the Father, not because he needed to pray for the Father, but he says, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me and I knew that thou hearest me always. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. Now back up just a minute. How many times have you, maybe you have experienced this personally, but how many times have you seen portrayed in a movie somebody dies in front of their loved ones? What do they do? They go over there and they shake that body. And they say, don't go, don't leave me, stay. This body's dead. It's clear the body's dead and the spirit's departed. And they shake that body and they slap their face and say, don't leave me, stay with me, I need you, don't leave me. And they cry and they weep. Don't you think Mary and Martha did that? Is that sickness in Lazarus slowly took his body, and when his soul finally departed, don't you think that they popped his face and they said, go get some cold water, let's put some water on him and shake him and get him, give me some blankets and let's do something. Lazarus, don't leave me, don't leave me. But the ultimate bondage had done what the ultimate bondage does, and that he died. And there was nothing they could do about it. He was dead. Now you've got some people over here that were possessed by devils that are described as being worthless and totally depraved. But is there anything more worthless than a dead body? Here's a dead body that can't even jump in the fire, can't jump in the water, can't do all these things, can't cut himself. He is totally dead. I bet Mary and Martha really, 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 really had a desire. You know, that's what will means. Your will is your desire. What is God's will? It's God's desire. I bet they had a desire to see Lazarus be healed from his sickness. That's why they called from Jesus, Lord, maybe he had the flu, or maybe he had a bad case of tuberculosis, or maybe, you know, I don't know what else, leprosy. I don't know what all they had back then. But they said, well, Jesus can, he can do this. He can heal him of the sickness. But obviously they doubted that he could bring him back to life. So the bondage that Lazarus lays in was three words. That's all it took. And it wouldn't have taken that for Jesus to say, Lazarus, come forth. That's all it took. Lazarus' will could not deliver him from the state he was in. Lazarus didn't even know he was dead. The wild Gadarene, the Syrophoenician woman's daughter, and the man whose boy was described as a lunatic, their desire to be free from that bondage could not deliver them from that bondage. Every single one of these cases, they were all in a condition, listen to this, they were all in a condition that required a special working from the Lord to be set free. Don't miss that. Every single one of these. So you ask me, do you believe in free will? Yes, I do. But I believe your free will has limits. And those limits are set by the very nature that you have. Let me explain it this way. Imagine a circle right here. And this circle, everything inside this circle represents your free will. When I woke up this morning, I decided to wear this tie. My choice. My desire. I wore it because I wanted to. I picked it out. I tied it on. And I got ready to go. That's inside the circle. I decided to wear this color suit. I decided how fast I would drive over here. I decided, what to eat for breakfast. I'll decide where to go eat lunch after this. All those things are inside this circle. I decided who I wanted to marry. I decided what I wanted to be for a living. All inside this. My free will is limited, but everything inside of that boundary is up to me. If I decided today to go out, leave this church service and get sloppy drunk, and go out and cheat on my wife, that's inside this circle. If I want to do that, I can do that. It's my choice. I think it would be great if I could fly. If I could walk out here and just like Superman and just lift off into the air and fly wherever I wanted to go. Wouldn't that be awesome? But guess what? That's outside the circle. My nature limits me. And I cannot fly wherever I want to go, even if my 100% desire is to just to take off and fly back home and leave that minivan sitting in the parking lot. I can't do that because my nature limits me. That's outside the circle. I think it would be great if I could breathe underwater. We just got back from the beach and me and Emma got down there and we put our goggles on and we got down in the ocean water and we swam and we picked up seashells. But you know what? About every 20 seconds, 30 seconds, guess what old dad had to do? I had to come up and get some air. I had to breathe. Even if I had a scuba tank on, eventually that runs out. I cannot breathe underwater, even though I think it would be awesome to be able to do that. But why can't I do that? Because it's outside of that circle. And my free will has limits. I'm not able to fly. I'm not able to breathe underwater. I think it would be incredible to be invisible, to have the ability just to boom, I'm invisible. You can't see me. You know, I've spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars on camouflage over the years. I've sat in a tree stand before, still as a statue, having a mosquito on my nose and not been able to do this because the deer is standing right there. But if I was invisible, I wouldn't even need the camouflage. I could go in whatever I wanted to. I could swap mosquitoes when I wanted to. I could call the government and say, hey, if you'll pay me $20 million, I'll walk straight into an enemy camp. Straight in there, I can kill the leader, and they'll never even know I was there. Wouldn't it be great to be invisible? But I can't do that. Because that's outside the limits of what my nature allows me to do. I hope you can see this. I think it would be very interesting to be able to transport through time. There's some things I would love to see back in histories that I could just say, okay, you know, I'm going to go back to pick a date, bloop, and there I am. And all of a sudden, this church isn't here. Maybe it's a farm with and I'm in the middle of a big cornfield from 500 years ago. And I see these guys working. I can go over there and talk to them. Okay, this is fun. Glad to be back in the year 1500. Bloop, I'm going to go back to, you know, the birth of Christ. Or bloop, I'm going to go back to the beginning of creation. And just to be able to transport through time, I think that would be a great thing to be able to do, but I can't. Because it's outside of the limits of what my nature allows me to do. All right? There's other things that I'd like to do, but we'll just leave it with those. I think you get the point. I do believe in free will. But I believe your free will is limited and bound by the very nature that you have as a human being. Okay? That's what I want you to see. Now, where do we go from here? To be able to hear the gospel and let it roll around in your mind, and you sit there and think, is this something that I want to invest in and surrender to and bow to a holy God and make the decision to follow Him and give Him my life? Is that inside the circle or is that outside the circle? I want to prove to you by the Scriptures that those actions are outside of the circle. For the wild Gadarene and these other people and Lazarus, their desire to be delivered from their bondage was outside of that circle. Their free will did not extend that far. They were bound by the nature of a fallen human being. And they could not free themselves from their bondage. It took a special working of Jesus Christ to get accomplished what needed to be accomplished. Now, let's look over in the 8th chapter of John for just a second. Here's the question. Somebody that has never been born again. Somebody that's never been born again and that gospel falls on their ears. And somebody tells them, I'm here to tell you something. You're a sinner. You've done wrong. And you cannot stand before a holy God because you're a sinner condemned unclean. But I got good news for you. There's a man named Jesus who was the Son of God that came to this earth. He was brutally beaten. He was spit upon. He had the hair pulled from his beard. He had a crown of thorns placed on him. He was mocked. He was ridiculed. He was abandoned. He was laughed at. And his hands and feet were pierced. And they stood him up on that cross. And he hung there. And there came a point in there from the sixth hour, I believe, to the ninth hour, that the cup that the Lord holds in his hand of wrath and fury was poured out onto him as the lights went out. And he took on the sins. And he was the propitiation, it pleased the Lord to bruise him. And the Lord was satisfied with what he did to Jesus Christ that day in order to put the sins away of man. Now what you need to do, in order to have that blood applied to you, you need to do X, Y, and Z, and you can become a child of God. Where does that person's free will fit into this? Does that person just sit there and say, well, it's up to me. It's no different than what tie I chose. It's no different than deciding where I want to go eat lunch. It's just a matter of whether or not I decide to do it. Or is it outside of the circle, where everything that person presented to them is garbage and foolishness? Let's look at John the 8th chapter. In John the 8th chapter, this is some of the hardest preaching that you'll probably read about Jesus preaching. And I'm convinced, and if you stood up and you preached the way Jesus preached in John the 8th chapter, in John the 9th chapter, in John the 10th chapter, 99% of churches would ask the brother Jesus to leave and not come back. Jesus says in verse 42, if God were your Father, ye would love me, for I proceeded forth and came from God. Neither came I of myself, but he sent me. Why do ye not understand my speech? Even because ye cannot hear my word. Even because ye cannot. The word cannot there, it means the absolute negative. It means never. Impossible. Even because ye cannot hear my word. Ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. And because I tell you the truth, ye believe me not. Let me pause there and read you this one. Jesus says in John 18, he says, everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice. Jesus said, everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice. And because I tell you the truth, ye believe not. How is he that is of God heareth God's words? Ye therefore hear them not, because ye are not of God. That's plain language, folks. What does Jesus say to them here? Jesus in John 14 said, I am the way, the truth. Jesus said, I am the truth. I am the truth, is what Jesus said. And Jesus says, he that is of God hears the truth. And he that is not of God doesn't hear it. Listen to what he says. He that is of God heareth God's words. Ye therefore hear them not, because you're not willing to, because ye didn't make the right choice, because it was not presented to you in the proper way, because they didn't give you a bowl of candy or a hot cup of soup when they presented the gospel to you. No, you don't hear them because you're not of God. He says, why do you not understand my speech? Because you can't. You can't. It is absolutely impossible for your free will to take you to the point to understand and to hear my speech. I hope that that's clear. I hope you can see that. What do we read about 1 Corinthians 2:14, where Paul writes a verse that we use very, very many times? 1 Corinthians 2:14. The natural man, that's the man that's not born again. The natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. Now here's a question I've thrown out, the example I've used before. I think I've used it here. If you and I walk up to the Grand Canyon, and I've got a string about as big as that string hanging down from the ceiling fan there, stretched all the way across the Grand Canyon. And I said, all right, buddy, you first. Walk across the string. Let's get to the other side of that Grand Canyon. What are you going to do? He said, man, you're crazy. There ain't no way I'm walking across that string. Would that not be utter foolishness to you? Oh, no, man, don't be afraid. That's a super string. It's a super strong string. And you can get across it, and it's such an awesome string that you don't even have to keep your balance. You can walk across it like it's a 20-something foot highway. You going to do it? Nope. Why? Because it's foolishness to you. What if I told you this? All right, let me make this deal a little bit better. It is a super strong string. And you can walk across it without keeping your balance. And on the other side of this string is $50 million. If you'll go, you can have it. I tell you what, there's $100 million over there. Take off. Let's go. Would you do it? Absolutely not. Why? Because it's foolishness to you. It's foolish. What if I said, there's $100 billion over there, and there is a wild, crazy, man-eating grizzly bear charging us on this side, and the only way to get to the other side is across my super strong string. Are you going to do it? Nope. You're going to take your chances with that grizzly bear because it's foolishness to you. How do you get somebody to accept something that you know they're going to think is foolish. It's impossible. It is impossible to do that. The natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. 1 Corinthians 1:18 says this, to get a little more specific, for the preaching of the cross is to them that perish, what? Foolishness. The preaching of the cross is to those that are not born again, foolishness. There is no amount of candy, hot soup, banana splits, hugs and kisses, money, anything that will allow somebody to break free from the bondage of their dead spiritual nature and follow Christ. They are in bondage just like Lazarus was, and the wild Gadarene, and the young boy and girl who were possessed with devils. Jesus says, concerning the gospel, concerning the truth, it's not that you won't hear it. It's that you can't hear it. Because it's outside of the circle. It's not because it wasn't presented in the right way. It's, you know, this tie, going back to this tie, I really wanted to wear this one today for some reason. Tiffany could have walked in the closet and said, I don't know, let's wear this one. And I said, well, I really want to wear this one. Well, what about this one or this one? Or maybe this one. But let's don't do this one. She could have eventually persuaded me not to wear this tie. Why? Because it's inside the circle. But when something is outside the circle, she could come to me and say, please, jump up off this ground and fly to the store and get me a candy bar. She could have begged and begged and begged and begged and begged, and I would not have been able to do it. Because it's outside of the nature that I've been given. All right, I hope you see that. I'm sorry if I'm belaboring that point. Jesus says, you can't hear my words. Jesus says, I am the truth, and that he that is of the truth can hear it. Jesus says, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, and the good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. And he turns right around, and he looks at a Pharisee and says, and you are not my sheep. That's Jesus talking. Jesus says, for you to be able to break the bonds of a dead, depraved, worthless spiritual nature is outside of your ability. But Jesus said, I cast out 2,000 with my voice. Jesus said, I told the Syrophoenician woman without even seeing her daughter, I didn't have to touch her. I didn't have to lay a hand on her. I didn't have to say some chant. I just said, let it be, and it was, and it be. He tells the Father, your son's healed. He tells Lazarus, come forth. You think Lazarus had to roll around in his mind? Well, do I really want to do that? Comfortable. They dress me up nice. As a matter of fact, I'm in heaven. Do I really want to obey the Lord? He didn't have a choice. The Lord said, this is how it's going to be. I'm bringing you out of the bondage that extends beyond your free will, and I'm going to do a work in you to make you something you're not able to make yourself. Now, just to beat a dead horse, because this verse has got to be used. I've got to use it. If you gave me one verse, I told Brother Chris last night, if you gave me one verse, and that's the only verse I could ever use to defend the doctrine that it takes the working of the Lord to make a child of God. If you could only give me one. There's some good ones in Ephesians. I'll take Isaiah 26:10, and let me read it to you. Let favor be showed to the wicked, yet will he not learn righteousness. In the land of uprightness, he will deal unjustly and will not behold the majesty of the Lord. You hear what that said? This says this, let favor be showed to the wicked, and he's still not going to do what's right. Now, what is that word favor there? I encourage you to go look up the Hebrew word for favor there and the definitions. I jotted a few of them down because I couldn't remember them all. The word favor means benevolence. Benevolence is giving, you know, an act of kindness. We typically think of benevolence as giving somebody money. Hey, sir, I just wanted you to know that you're a sinner and condemned unclean, and I'd like to give you what you need to do to get to heaven. Here's $100. Will you accept Jesus? Let favor be shown to the wicked, yet he will not learn righteousness. Benevolence means courteous. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Sir, let me open this door for you and let you in. Can I carry your bags to your hotel room? Can I go park your car for you? Can I lay my nice jacket over this mud hole so you don't step on it? I'd like to do those things to be able to get you to embrace the gospel. Let favor be shown to the wicked, yet he will not learn righteousness. Pity is another definition for favor there. Mercy is another definition of favor. Oh, sir, I know that you just punched me right between the eyes, but I would just like for you to know that I'm going to get my tissue and hold it over my nose. Can I tell you about Jesus? I'm not going to retaliate. I'm not going to revile against you. Can I tell you about Jesus? Let favor be shown to the wicked, yet he will not learn up righteousness. Consideration. It means that means to think about people. Sir, I just want you to know that I've been thinking about you for weeks and weeks and weeks on end. And I've just, you know, you've been on my mind and my heart. And I want to do something for you. I want to do some kind things for you. Favor to the wicked will not teach them righteousness. Another definition there of favor means to implore or to beg urgently. When I was walking the streets, when I was knocking on doors, trying to do the very things that I'm telling you is ineffective today, when I was trying to increase the number in heaven, one of the quotes that I kept in my mind went something like this: if people are going to go to hell, may they have to jump over our bodies to get there. And may they be drug into the pits of hell with our arms around their ankles, begging and pleading for them to make the right decision. To show somebody favor means to beg urgently. Folks, you can beg and you can weep and you can cry all you want to, but favor shown to the wicked will not teach him righteousness. One more definition of favor means to pray. Think about that. I had a lady the other day tell me, says, you know, they found a big black hole out in space. She said, and I believe that this black hole is the bottomless pit. She said, I believe it's the abyss. And I wasn't engaging her in any conversation. She was just telling me this. And she said, you know, I want you to know that I just pray every day. I just pray every day for my family that that's not where they go. That they'll just do what they need to do and make the right decision. Folks, you can pray for people, as I'm sure people prayed for the wild Gadarene, and as I'm sure people prayed for Lazarus and the other two. But favor, benevolence, mercy, pity, courtesy, prayer, urgently begging, none of those things will teach the unrighteous and wicked to do right. In the land of uprightness will he deal unjustly, and will not behold the majesty of the Lord. Folks, I think that's about as plain as it could be. And I got to tell you, if I had my bags packed and I was fixing to go to the most remote place in the world, and I was fixing to take a walking stick and walk into the deepest, darkest, most dangerous jungles with the intent to save a man's soul from hell, and I just happened to read Isaiah 26:10 as I sat on that plane waiting for it to take off, I hope that I would have sense enough to say, Lord, I will let your word be the authority in my life, and I would get up and go back home.
Amen, bro.
And get it straight in my mind. Now listen, hear me. If the Lord has burdened you to go do that, for the sake of teaching God's people what God's Word says, go. Do it. But don't go do those things under the false pretense that you can get people to heaven. Because the Bible says, let favor be shown to the wicked, yet he will not learn righteousness. I can't tell you the number of times I've taken a cup full of candy, knocked on somebody's door, here's some candy, can I tell you about Jesus? Yeah. Folks, I could have filled it with $100 bills, and they'd have took it. But I couldn't have been, that would not have made me effective in talking. Now, let me close with this. John, the first chapter. Think of the examples that we gave you. Think about the demon-possessed people. Their free will was ineffective because it was beyond the limits of their nature. Jesus says, your free will to follow me, accept me, bow to me, and embrace me is ineffective because it's beyond the limits of what your spiritually dead nature is able to do. Jesus said that. Jesus said, you cannot hear my words. But just like the wild Gadarene and these other folks, that it took a special working of the Lord to free them from their bondage when their free will couldn't do it. Jesus just said, here's how it's going to be. Be gone, demons. Jesus says in John the 5th chapter, the hour is coming, and now is when the dead, the spiritually dead, shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. Lazarus heard the voice of the Son of God, and he came forth and was alive. The spiritually dead hear the voice of the Son of God, and they become spiritually alive where they can serve him. What about the will of man? Just to prove to you one more time that this is outside of the circle. In John, the first chapter, in the 12th verse, but as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man. What's that tell us, folks? That your free will is not part of the equation in being born again, but of God. This says that he gave power to become. That word become, there means to come on to stage, to come on to the stage, or to appear publicly before men. I can remember, I know Mom and Daddy remember, probably. I think it was the first grade. We had a play at our school, and guess who got to be Oscar the Grouch? Me. Y'all already know who Oscar the Grouch is? Some of you don't know. Oscar the Grouch, he was a green fuzzy thing and on Sesame Street, and he lived in a garbage can. And I had a little barrel around me and little suspenders holding my garbage can up, and I don't know who made that fuzzy little green suit, but it looked good. I looked like Oscar the Grouch and probably acted like it most of the time. And I held up a letter. I remember that. I would hold up a letter. Well, there came a time that I was off stage. I was still Oscar the Grouch. I still looked like him, and I was ready to roll. And when it was time for Oscar to come out on stage, I was already dressed up and I already looked like him, but y'all wouldn't have known it. But when it came my time, here I come. Oscar the Grouch. Boom. On stage. Felt good about it. To become means to come onto a stage and appear publicly before men. There's a time in every child of God's life when God says, live, come out of your bondage, come out of your spiritual deadness. And just like when Isaac was born, it was at the Lord's appointed time, so is the new birth. And when that happens, you come onto stage and you appear publicly before men as something that they have never seen before, as a new creature. Behold, any man, if he is in Christ, he's a new creature. Now, do I believe in free will? Yes, I absolutely do. But I believe that free will has limits. And I believe everything inside of that circle is up to us. Who you marry, where you go to college, what you do for a living, what color tie you wear, whether you choose to sin or not. Let me tell you something. If you choose to sin, that's on you. That's your decision inside the circle. You can't fly, you can't breathe underwater, you can't become invisible, you can't transport through time, and you cannot bow and surrender and give your life to a holy God.
That's right.
And you can't hear the gospel and interpret it and embrace it and it makes sense to you and quicken you and prick you unless the Lord says, live. He brought them out of bondage. He brought them out of demon possession. He brought them out of death. And He brings His people out of spiritual death. I believe in free will. I believe it's limited. I believe predestination is the glorious truth that the thing that is outside the circle became a reality because He predetermined it to be so.
Amen.
I believe in predestination and I believe in free will. And I hope that that makes sense. And I hope that that gives you some clarity. I hope that if you've never heard those things before, don't beat yourself up if you're like, huh? Because that's how I feel. If you've heard those things before, I hope that gives you some explanation or some examples that you can use to teach somebody. I am thankful that the Lord saw fit to deliver those people from that demon possession. And I'm thankful that He saw fit to raise Lazarus. I'm thankful that He saw fit to give us something that our free will can never bring about on our own.